Let's
Sorry.
be recorded. It's fine. Technically, I can't talk about it now because I signed a confidentiality clause.
How's the ASMR of me eating my bagel?
It's great. I also have the ASMR of my voice because I can hear my mic.
Oh, but ASMR is supposed to be like relaxing and pleasant.
It's not. It's not. It's not.
I was trying to give you like a burn. Like I was trying to be like, your voice is not pleasant to listen to, but then
you doubled down. I thought you were doing that a bit from like that Paradise WhatsApp group where we spoke about ASMR the other week. I don't know if you saw that. I was cracking up.
Oh, yes, I did. I did see that. Oh my God, that Paradise WhatsApp refuses to die. I do want to shout out a big topic of conversation in the WhatsApp group was recycling in Jerusalem because they got rid of all of the recycling things and people literally... Five times over the course of the year, people texted and were like, hey, does anybody know what's up with recycling in Jerusalem? Yeah. It was like the hot topic of
we had a lot of hot topics. I'm sorry.
And then Mayan recently texted the group to be like, there's a recycling center like outside of Shufersal. And I was like, Mayan's the ears on the ground.
Yeah. Well, no, there's been a recycling center inside Shufersal the whole time. It's just that no one used it.
What, Shoshana? I can't believe you didn't tell anyone. I didn't know that.
Everyone knew this. Every time
I didn't know that.
Mentioned recycling. Welcome to Pop Culture Parsha,
where we irreverently discuss reverent text.
Amazing.
Yay. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Okay, my pop culture, I'm Valerie, in case you didn't know. And my pop culture moment this week is I finally watched Stranger Things.
Nice. Have you seen the first seasons?
Yeah. So I've seen the other seasons, but I just
BH.
Yeah. I just like hadn't gotten through this season. I just like, I had some skepticism of like, there's been a lot of seasons of this show. Like, am I really going to like another season of it? And it took me a long time to get through the first episode. Anyway, I finally watched it. I have like 30 minutes of the finale left. And I did not realize how much other popular culture out there was related to Stranger Things. Like
what?
Like Kate Bush.
You didn't realize that the Kate Bush song was because of Stranger Things?
No, I did not know.
That was just trending?
I thought it was just trending on TikTok. And it was like other places too. Like people are like, somebody was like at the Trevi Fountain and turned around and there was like Kate Bush graffiti behind them. There was like so much. And then I was like, oh, that's where that came from. Yeah, I had no idea. It's like number one on Spotify. I just thought like it was trending on TikTok.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
She's making $1 million a week because she is like the salt. Like she wrote the song. She produced the song. She sang the song. She's not paying anyone else. She gets 100% of the royalties.
Good for her.
For a song she released in 1985 and now she's getting like king shit money. That's friggin' insane.
It's crazy. It's just like, yeah, culture is insane. Anyways, yeah, so I had no idea. And then also this is like much smaller, but the Chrissy wake up sound on TikTok.
You didn't know? Oh my God, Valerie.
Bro, I hadn't seen the season. I didn't know.
You didn't, but like, you didn't like look, don't you like hear a sound and it's trending? So you go into the sound to see where it came from. And then they show you a clip of the show because people like make remixes of it.
Sometimes, but not all the time.
Oh my God. So you just have been singing Chrissy Wake Up to yourself, not knowing where that sound is from.
But now I know. That's what I'm saying. That's my
better. And I do better. You're literally a cult. Like your job is culture. Be better.
I watched the season. Here I am. I watched it. Now I know.
A month, like 2 months too late. Far out.
Oh my God. I have a point to make about this. Shoshana, stop bullying me.
I'm going to shame.
I know I'm never up on pop culture enough for your liking. What I was going to say is I was just like, it's amazing that Stranger Things has that effect on pop culture. Like, it's kind of crazy for like one TV show to have like reached out its little spooky fingers into all these different places.
Like, yes and no. I feel like it's just like Stranger Things does now what a lot of TV shows were doing in like, let's say, the 80s and the 90s, which is like just hallmark moments of culture that everyone is experiencing at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think that because it's such an oversaturated of like all film and TV, that just like it doesn't happen as much anymore, because not as many people are watching the exact same thing. And Stranger Things is like the last thing that I can think
of. That a
lot of
people are watching.
Yeah.
That's some like watching, some watching a little later than others.
Yeah. And those people aren't valid.
Wow.
Okay. Well, I'm watching, I feel like I've been watching a lot of TV, but I'm currently catching up on season two of the L Word, Generation Q. And I'd just like to say it's a horrible, terrible show, and every single character sucks and is insufferable. And yet I can't stop watching. But my pop culture moment comes from the first season, like the first series. I was never into it, because in like the first or second episode of season one of the original L Word, one of the characters, like fully unironically, wears a floor-length leather trench coat. And I saw that and I immediately was like, I can't do this. I can't handle this. Like, it is so early 2000s that it hurts. In a way that like, in a way that things like Grey's Anatomy aren't. Because Grey's Anatomy was like a smidge later. And it's also like set in a hospital.
So they're all wearing scrubs. Yeah.
They're wearing scrubs. But like, or like Desperate Housewives, well, again, like a smidge later, but they're all housewives. So they're wearing just like suburban, like fancy suburban clothes. This is like bitches in LA being gay. Mm. And it's just, oh, the horrible, horrible wardrobe. And that's like literally the thing that I couldn't watch it anymore. Like, it was just so bad. So I'm watching, like, a lot gets lost on me with Generation Q because I haven't seen the OG series. But yeah,
I'd like to see that. I'd like to see like the outfits of the L Word, the original season.
It's perfect for you. Like, it's like with your timeline of how you.
Right. Thank you.
Like, it was released like what, 20 years ago. So it's perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, now you watch it because you watch
right.
it. Get it. It's because you watch things so late.
I get it.
Do you get the joke?
Yeah. Sick burn.
Oh my God. Thank you.
That was the noise of my burn.
Sick burn ASMR.
Nice. Okay, I want to move on to the next segment, which is what's on my TikTok right now.
Okay, this is a brand new segment.
No, we've talked about it before.
Okay, I didn't realize it was a formal segment.
It's
okay.
A formal segment this week.
Okay,
cool. I just do appreciate now the algorithm is there for me. Like, it's cat videos, it's collecting videos, which I'm going to talk about. And then I got like a Navarro Cheer thing. I'm like, cool. You know, from the Netflix show Cheer. And then I've got more cat videos. It's perfect. The collection video, it's like, I'm sure you've seen it, like the one they do like these flat lays a lot where they have like little objects, they're all placed out. But I didn't realize that that's like a museum of collections. And so they just have like all these little drawers and filing cabinets full of like dice and like little animal figurines and like all kinds of cool stuff. And they got a donation from somebody and they were just like opening up all these little boxes of like little wood pieces and little, it was just like, I had this moment of, I know what my next career is, and it's collecting little objects.
Amazing. Wow. I love that for you.
Thank you.
Well, my TikTok is a lot of like ADHD content, even though I have not been formally diagnosed with ADHD. It's a lot of gay stuff. It's a lot of like absurdist comedy. And then every so often I wonder onto like rock tumbling TikTok, which is just like a couple of women in the pandemic started doing rock tumbling with Natural Geographic kits.
Yeah.
And then they just never stopped. So it's like,
that's like a plot line.
I also don't know why I watch every single video. Like, I'm like, it's so weird. It shows me that I watch every single one of those videos every time it comes up, all the way through. And the algorithm's like, this weirdo likes rock tumbling, I guess, and keep showing me more. It's my own fault.
Yeah. My own fault. That was a plot line in Gilmore Girls, I think.
Rock tumbling?
Not, like a rock polishing kit. I think April wanted a rock polishing kit. And then Rory was like, that's the one I had.
Oh, I have news for you.
Oh.
It's a confession.
Oh.
I was on a podcast that isn't our podcast.
What?
I was interviewed by a podcast.
What podcast?
It's an anti-Semitism podcast. And the guy was like, we're stepping out of our comfort zone with you. It's usually we just interview rabbis and academics. And I'm like, well, you're welcome for lowering the bar.
Of the zone, yeah.
I was like, you are welcome for lowering the bar in this way. Yeah, so then we just spoke for a bit. And I told him I had never seen Seinfeld. And he got really mad at me. But yeah, that's going to be coming out in like a couple of weeks.
You've never seen Seinfeld?
Yeah. Anyway, I mentioned our podcast.
And you're out here giving me a hard time for the pop culture I've seen.
At this point, I just don't think I could watch it. Because now it's like a shtick, you know?
Oh, a shtick that you haven't watched Seinfeld. You see him and you're like, who is that?
Well, that's the thing. I'm just like, I know his whole thing. Jerry Seinfeld, get out of here.
Yeah.
Like, the only person I'd watch that show for is Julie Louis-Dreyfus, and I can just watch her in Veep, so it's fine.
Yeah, and Veep really shows off her talents.
Oh my god, Veep is so good. Yeah. But anyway, should we get to the Parsha?
Yeah, let's talk about the Parsha.
This week's Parsha is a double Parsha. It's two. It's called Matot and Maaseh. So the first one's Matot and the second one's Maaseh. How are you interrupting me already?
Because what? I realized that 2 weeks ago, we need to do a little correction segment, because 2 weeks ago when we talked about Pinchas, and you said that the Israelite and the Midianite woman were named and like we knew who they were, and I was like, that's not in the pshat. In the next week, it is in the pshat.
There you
who
go.
It is.
Oh, well, and so I just wanted always to. Right.
I know.
Wow.
And that's the podcast. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for coming.
You're welcome. Okay. So before I was rudely interrupted by Valerie. So we start off this double parsha with rules about nullifying vows, just like how to get out of a vow. And that's about it. And then the Israelites are told that they have to get revenge on the Midianites because of the whole thing that happened a few parashiyot ago, like Valerie was just talking about. You look confused.
Well, is it any vow, or is it like specifically, isn't it like it's a neder, right? Isn't that like a specific type of vow?
I don't know, man. I'm just going off of chabad.org/nutshell/parsha.
I think, hold on just a second.
Fact check.
A neder is like a type of vow that you make with Hashem, right? What am I thinking of?
I think it's vows that you make in God's name, because those are the ones that like have like gravitas behind them. And then like it talks about like how men can nullify vows for their wives in certain situations, different things like that.
Okay.
On that, which also we can put as a comparison later on.
Yeah.
I'm getting ahead of myself. So the Israelites are told to exact revenge on the Midianites because of, like you said a few parashiyot ago, when all of the Midianite women come into the Israelite camp. And then Pinchas, also from a couple of weeks ago, he leads a small army of about 12,000 people into battle. All of the Midianite males are killed. Bilam, the donkey man's killed. Five kings of Midian are killed. And then they bring back all of the women and the children and the spoils to the Israelite camp as like spoils of war. But then Moshe is mad, because they spared the women, but the women are the ones who like girl bossed their way into the Israelite camp. So he's like, they're the reason we're in this mess. Why would you bring them back here? And then, like, I got tired of reading the summary and I didn't exactly catch the, like, ending part of that bit. But then the next thing
for our podcast, for our podcast on the Parship, you can't even read the Chabad summary. You got tired of reading.
But then the next thing that caught my eye in the summary was that they tithe the spoils that they take from Midian. And they have, like, some of the stuff they bring are, like, utensils, and they have to learn how to kasha the utensils. So we get, like, mitzvot of how to kasha things. And then they can't do a head count. And they're like, how many of us died? And it turns out none of them died. And they're like, that's amazing. And so they take all of the gold they got from Midian and they offer it to the tabernacle as a gift. And then we, like, kind of change scenes and we shift a bit. And the tribes of Reuben and Gad have a lot of cattle. And they see that this side of the Jordan that they're on has, like, a lot of, like, really plentiful, like, farmland, or like lots of land, you know, whatever word you want, acres and acres of, like, green grass. And so they're like, we actually want to stay here and not go into Eretz Yisrael. And then Moshe's like, how dare you say that you don't want to go into the land of Israel? That's ridiculous. And I think it's because Moshe's a bit jealous because he doesn't get to go into Israel. And then you have a whole group of people being like, we don't really want to go there either. And he's like, shut up. You don't know what's good for you. Anyway, but then Reuven and Gad say that, like, we'll help everyone conquer Israel and then come back here. And Moshe's like, fine, that's okay. And then did you know it took us 42 years to get through the desert? Because the Parsha reminds us of that. And then Hashem tells us that we have to eradicate everyone who lives in Canaan and destroy all of their idols. And then we delineate the land borders and we learn that the land is going to be lotteried off to get, like, the different groups at random. And then we learn about the cities of refuge, which are little cities that are run by Levites that are, like, spread out. There are six of them across the land. And if you accidentally kill someone, you can take refuge in the city to escape, like, the family if they are vengeful in any way. And you sort of live there until the Kohen Gadol dies. It's a whole thing. Google it later. And then the very end of the parasha is sort of what we're going to be focusing on, which is that a couple of weeks ago, we spoke about Salafchad's daughters who came forward and asked if they could have their father's land because he had no sons. And Moshe went to God and God said that was fine. But now in this week's parasha, after we've sort of delineated all of the land and, like, divvied it up between the tribes, the, like, other tribes people of Tzalafchad's tribe are really mad that, like, if his daughters get married out, like, off to other tribes, then those tribes will inherit their land. And they don't want that to happen. Hello, cat. I don't know which one that is. Hi, Zati. And then God tells them that they have to marry men from their own tribe, which they do, so that the land stays within their tribe. Can I just say that I told my friends, Jordy, who's a big fan of this show, our favorite little burp.
Yeah.
So we were talking and then the cats came up and he was like, Zati and Sum Sum. And his wife, my friend Sarah, thought that Sum Sum was short for sumac. She's like, Zatar and sumac. And I'm like, no, Sum Sum. And she's like, well, that's not even a spice. And I'm like, yeah, well, take it up with Valerie.
Yeah. I mean, the question was,
I can't remember if she said that or if she was like, but there's sumsum in Zatar. And that's why she was confused.
There's also,
like,
sumac in Zatar.
Yeah. Anyway, it was just very funny.
Yes. I think they go well together. But if they have another suggestion, we discussed many spices as a name for sumi. But
nice.
This fit her the best.
And that's the parsha.
And that's the Parsha. Thank you, Shoshana. This week, we watched Pride and Prejudice, a 2005 romantic drama film.
It's one of my favorites. We watched, you have to specify that we watched the 2000. I know you just did, but I was woohooing. We watched the 2005 one because it's the best one. It's better than the BBC one with Colin Firth. And I will defend that for as long as I live.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, 2005 romantic drama directed by Joe Wright, his directorial debut, feature directorial debut, based on Jane Austen's 1813 novel of the same name. You best believe we did not read the novel for the podcast.
Well, like, have you read the novel before?
I don't know.
It was released in the 1800s, so you've had plenty of time.
I've had a lot of time. Oh, well, I didn't watch the end of the movie because, like, spoilers, you know? I'm just kidding.
Okay, but also, like, the Americans have a different ending to the rest of the world. It makes me so mad. Did you watch the version? Did you see the ending?
Yeah.
Or did you just run out of time? Okay.
No, I was joking. I was joking.
Okay. It didn't land. In your version, did they kiss at the end? In that last scene where he calls her Mrs. Darcy?
I don't remember. I think.
Yeah, that's the American version, and that's not in the actual version. But they tested it with Americans, and they didn't like the original ending. In the original, it ends with Mr. Bennett laughing after, like, he gives his blessing, and, like, just fades after he, like, it's him alone in his office. And Americans are like, we hate that. And so they ruined the movie by adding that last kiss scene. It's, like, so out of character and horrible.
Yeah, I did think it was, like, a bit silly. That's funny. I didn't know that. Wow, what a good fact. Okay, well, let me just tell people who haven't seen the movie, either version, or read the book. Film features five sisters from an English family of landed gentry as they deal with issues of marriage, morality, and misconceptions. Keira Knightley stars in the lead role of Elizabeth Bennet, while Matthew McFadden plays her romantic interest, Mr. Darcy.
Nice.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on the movie?
What are my thoughts on the movie? I freaking love this movie. It's so good. I think it's one of my favorite movies. I just, like, it's a comfort movie. It makes me feel warm and happy. It's just so good. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So annoying. I think that Keira Knightley is the perfect Elizabeth Bennet. I think that, like, it's controversial, but I think that Matthew McFadden is a better Mr. Darcy than Colin Firth.
I think Rosamund Pike is perfect. Everyone's
perfect. The fact that Judy Dench is in this,
yeah,
oh my God, it's the best.
It's great so casting. My only complaint, really, is that the camera work is kind of weird.
Oh, I love it. That's one of my favorite things about this movie. This movie is like, it's sort of like modernized classic movies, right? Like, a lot of the times, like, movies that are based on, like, classic novels and things like that, like, the camera work and all that stuff is very stagnant, and it's, like, just straight to the point and, like, sort of, like, old-fashioned. But this movie, like, Dufkin did the opposite, where it modernized it and it made it, like, dynamic and super interesting to watch.
The scene where, like, Mr. Collins is telling Mrs. Bennet that he wants to marry Jane, is the older sister's name.
Yeah.
And then she, like, suggests that he marries Elizabeth instead. It's like The Office, like, it's zoomed in on the two of them, and then it zooms in and then it zooms back out, and, like, the camera has to, like, refocus. So I was like,
I love it.
Yeah.
Also, just, like, I love how real it feels, like, you know, the dirt on the dresses and,
yes,
like, the cramped houses and just all of that stuff. People don't like it. Like all of those, like, Austen purists don't like it because he did change a couple of things. But I just think those it works so well.
Austen purists. Yeah, I did like the dance scene where they're, like, in the ballroom and it's, like, very crowded and, like, but I wanted a little bit, what, why are you making the scene?
Because the scene where, like, they dance and then it, like, cuts and they're the only two people in the room,
that was really good.
Literally, yeah, the height of romance. This movie invented yearning.
Yeah. No, but I was talking about the first ball one, where they meet, that's, like, a little bit less fancy. Yeah, I don't know. Part of me wanted, like, really, like, beautiful dresses and really, like, you want that kind of, like, luxury that you get in other period pieces.
Right,
But I did appreciate that it, I guess, is more realistic.
My other favorite thing is And so I'm just putting my phone on do not disturb.
But I was like yearning for Bridgerton a little bit, right? Because yeah. I'm like, that's like the what I want to imagine this world is like.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think you do get that. Like, I love the scene where she's like in his house, like in his mansion, and she's like walking through all of the marble statues. I think it's just such a gorgeous scene.
Yeah.
I just like it's wonderful. One of my favorite facts about this movie is like when at like dawn, when he's like walking towards her in like the foggy marshes, he has to wear glasses, and he wasn't wearing his glasses, and it was like super early in the morning and it was really foggy, no one could see anything. And so like we see like Mr. Darcy like romantically walking up towards the house to like come back to her. What's happening behind the camera is the director's got a red flag that he's waving like this so he could see something to walk towards. It's just so funny. This movie makes me happy.
Yeah. You do really get the payoff of like every time she like goes off and is by herself, like she turns around and Mr. Darcy is there. And that's really satisfying.
Also, yeah. They just have like such good chemistry. And I also like, I maintain that like period romantic pieces like this, like they're the best that you can transform into like, or you can sort of adapt in a contemporary way to just from culture, right? Of these people. And I think that's what I really appreciate. It's things like this and things like in Schtissel and Unorthodox and all of those shows, ways that they build like romantic tension and chemistry and attraction without touch at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just all through the ways that they're like, bodies interact from across the room or from being right next to each other but like not touching. And I think that it's like fantastic. It's so satisfying to watch because it's like just like that much more frustrating. Like you want it so much more because like there is that something that they don't have.
Well, right. I also think like the like inner world of the characters becomes much more important, right? Yeah. Like you can imagine that like, yeah, that yearning that builds over time when you like literally have no idea where the other person is in the world or what they're doing.
Yeah. I think it's like similar. I'm also thinking about now, cause I was just reading a book about it and rewatched them. But like in Sleepless in Seattle, like Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan have so much chemistry, even though they only share like 2 seconds of screen time together, but like they somehow have chemistry when they're not even in scenes together, right? They just build, their body language is so similar and the way that they relate to their worlds are so similar that you can't help but imagine that they'd be perfect for each other. And I'm thinking also the same with When Harry Met Sally, which is that like the buildup is a bit different of their like their friendship chemistry, right? And like they take such care and dedication building that up in a really satisfying way before it spills over into like the touch.
Totally.
I'm a bit annoyed.
Why?
Because I remembered what I really thought we needed to talk about, which is the fact that it has nothing to do with the Parsha or Pride and Prejudice. Did you see that Vanessa Hudgens posted a TikTok and reel of her outside of East High School?
Yeah.
And at the same time, Zac Efron posted a picture of him outside the high school. And so it's either they're filming something or they're back together, or it's just a coincidence, which is, as we know in Judaism, there is no such thing as coincidence. It's all hashgacha pratis from Hashem. So what does that mean, Valerie?
I don't know.
What does it mean?
I truly don't know. Yeah, I have high hopes that something is going to happen.
I'm so scared.
It must be that something is coming out, but who knows what it is.
It's crazy.
What would your dream be? A High School Musical 5?
I don't even know. Like, I think I'm just so overwhelmed with the prospect that like, I can't even like conceptualize what I want it to be. Also, it'd be High School Musical 4 because no one counts Sharpay's Adventure.
I know. Anyway, yeah. We're just going to have to wait and see. I was going to ask you if you've seen Persuasion on Netflix in our Jane Austen.
No, I pulled a Valerie and I haven't watched it yet.
I'm just going to move past that. Yeah, I just listened to a podcast about it. I haven't, which is actually the most typical Valerie thing you can do, is not actually have seen it, but you've listened to a podcast about it. Yeah, they didn't love it. So,
Look, I kind of, again, I'm like not really listening to a lot of what people are saying. One, because people are like weirdly purist about adaptations because they want it to be exactly what they want it to be if they're a fan of the book. And I also sort of resent this like way we've started describing things that young sarcastic women do, which is just like calling it the Fleabagification of something. I'm like we can have more than just one woman. Like, we don't have to compare every single thing that someone does to
all British women are Fleabag.
Like, I remember like when like Aisling B has a really good show called This Way Up, and everyone's like, it's giving me Fleabag. And I'm like, we can have more than one. We can have lots of half-hour shows that center around the struggles of like women in their late 20s. Like, it's fine. We don't need to keep comparing it to Fleabag. But it's like, oh, someone broke the fourth wall. And I'm like, oh, like Fleabag did not invent that. Shut up.
Not at all.
Here's the thing. I love Fleabag dearly, desperately. I love it so much. But like, stop comparing things to it. That's my take.
All right. Shoshana has spoken, people.
It has been said.
Yeah.
Should we do our couple of comparisons we got?
Yeah, let's talk about our comparisons.
It's literally just the one, really.
No, well, I think we can start with what you started to say earlier, which is like a conversation about vows and promises that comes up a couple of times in the film of like who's promised to who. Obviously, like the end scene where Lady Catherine like shows up in the middle of the night.
Right. Yeah. I was also thinking with vows, like this idea of a husband in some situations is allowed to nullify his wife's vow. And this whole movie is basically sort of like subverting the reality of women in the 1800s, which is that like they don't get to decide what happens to them and they just have to do what their like fathers and husbands tell them to, essentially.
Right. And like this goes into, I think, our main comparison, but this like stress that comes with like having five daughters and like wanting them to be provided for. And also like their ability to self-determination, right? That like Elizabeth Bennet, Keira Knightley's character, like wants to a marriage for love and like has this thing and is like obviously very independent, but then her best friend marries Mr. Collins because she's like, I'm 27, like this is the best option that's gonna come to me.
She has no prospect, no money, no prospects. She's already a burden to her parents. Yeah. I also think firstly I'll say that like the no marriage, no prospects, I feel like had its huge moment in Greta Gerwig's Little Women when Amy has that whole monologue about, you know, women don't get to marry, especially her, like from a family who doesn't have much in the ways of money, but like doesn't get to marry for love. And it's such a privileged position to think that, you know, you can just like marry whoever you want and you don't have to think about the ramifications or, you know, think logically about it.
Yeah,
we thought of doing Little Women for this, but then we settled on Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah.
Like it came up.
I think Yarden that while we went to the Hamptons for a day, to Northampton. And wait, what Hampton were we in?
West Hampton.
Oh, there's no Northampton. I'm being told we were in West Hampton.
You ever just being whelmed?
I didn't know there were multiple Hamptons
Me
before
neither.
we
I just thought
went
it was like
to.
the Hamptons. I didn't know you could go to a specific Hampton.
Yes, apparently there are a few different ones. Anyway, I was
Amazing.
teasing her that, like, you know, you're like watching people walk by and like there's a conversation of like, which of these people are new money and which of these people are old money and which of these people are no money and whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to go find a nice old money family with a single daughter.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, wouldn't that be the dream?
I say it all the time. My dream is just to marry rich. I don't think I'm built for full-time work.
Right.
It's
like
just not
I
for
thought
me.
You know, Yarden's parents got a place on Long Beach so that we like went to a beach house, but like how much better to go to like your family's mansion,
yeah, a Hampton
that's been in the family for generation in all the Hamptons. Maybe you have one in each.
One in every Hampton.
One in every Hampton. No reaction from Yarden on the couch.
What was I gonna say? Yeah, I think back to the parsha. I think that one of the reasons this works better than Little Women is because it deals specifically with the idea of like losing family land, which in like that Mr. Bennett.
No, not Little Women. You mean Pride and Prejudice?
Well, I'm saying we didn't do Little Women. We
oh,
did this
I see.
One instead, because Mr. Bennett doesn't have sons and is going to lose his family land. It's going to go to Mr. Collins.
Right.
And so, which is also like sort of why Mr. Collins is going to marry in. Look, there's a lot of like politics and I guess like 19th century policy that I don't understand about land ownership and like the patron relationship between
yeah,
like Lady
that.
Catherine and Mr. Collins. A lot of that just goes straight over my head because I never studied that in school. But yeah, like it's all about just like the crux of the matter is Mr. Bennett doesn't have any sons. His
right.
land doesn't belong to him. It's going to like revert back to like the next of kin, which is Mr. Collins. And he's worried for like providing for his family. And then his two of his daughters marry rich and two
right.
of Salafkhad's daughters marry in the family. All of his daughters marry in the family and they get to keep the land.
Right. That's like a really interesting. Well, and it's interesting too with Salafkhad's daughters that they like figured it out so that like they get a land inheritance. But oh my God, she's drinking Diet Coke at 11 p.m.
It's vanilla.
Wow.
Vanilla Coke Zero. And I'm going to take a melatonin so it'll knock me out.
Oh, great. Perfect. So you're going to calf up and then take a melatonin. Too.
Yeah.
I got distracted because that's the same color as the caffeine-free Diet Coke.
It's vanilla.
Yeah.
You
that used to
that-
be my parents used to drink caffeine-free Diet Coke like it was going out of style. My mom used to drink one every afternoon.
Oh, Betsy.
Until I was like, you have to stop that. It's so bad for you.
You were saying that a couple of parishes ago, Salafkhad's daughters like had this feminism moment.
Oh, right. Where they
land,
were able
but then they just
to...
like don't get to marry who they want.
Right. It's like they would have to remain unmarried in order to like continue to control their lands.
Yeah. I think like what they were worried about is that like they'd be single. Right. I think the worry for Slavka's daughter specifically is that before they got married, if their dad died, which he did,
they would just have nothing.
They'd have nothing. And like they wouldn't have brothers to marry them off. Like, why would grandfathers or uncles give a crap? They've got their own families,
right.
And they'd just be like destitute. Like it was I think it was always a safety net for if they were alone and had to be self-sufficient, they'd have the means to do so.
I've been looking a lot for whatever reason at Eshet Chayil, because we don't sing it, but we sing it like as a nigun. As a part of our Friday night rituals. But then like we've been looking at the text. Anyway, there's a part in my big question when like reading that thing is like, who is this woman? Right. And like, is she someone, is this something to celebrate or not? And there are a few lines where it's like centered around like her status has to do with her husband, but there are like several lines. And the one I'm thinking of now is like, she sees a field and buys it.
Right.
Which I think is like a really interesting, I don't know. It's like interesting in that it indicates that she like has control over finances and that like she's making business decisions. There's also a line about her like planting a vineyard and like reaping the fruit from it. The line that I've been obsessed with recently, this is like not related to this, is Fetishak Loyom Acharon. Which means like she laughs. Either you can translate it a few different ways, like the literal or the closest translation would be like she laughs at the days to come. But I also read a translation that translates it as she laughs at death.
Nice.
Both of which I think are like pretty metal. So
if you had to cast the Eshet Chayil, any actress, who would it be?
Ooh.
I have two answers.
Maybe like Viola Davis.
Interesting. Interesting. I was thinking either like Lupita Nyong'o or Anne Hathaway.
I'm confused about Anne Hathaway. Like recently in the public eye, she has like looked incredible and like seems like, but there were like a few years where I felt like every time Anne Hathaway like got up to a microphone, she looked like she was about to burst into tears.
Yeah, because being a celebrity sucks. I don't know if you know this, but as a micro internet celebrity, it's not all fun and games. Sometimes it's hard. My friend Venti and I have Tatiana Maslany is in a new TV show for Marvel and has been doing like all of this different Comic-Con stuff, and so there's all of these new pictures of Tatiana Maslany and she looks amazing. Like, I don't know if you can see this properly.
Send it to me.
She just like, her hair is on point, like bitch has been working out. She's also like the gayest straight person, or gayest like unconfirmed gay person, you know.
Anyway, you were telling me this for what reason?
Oh, just because I was thinking about Tatiana Maslany. What is everything apropos, reason?
Apropos of nothing.
Well, you said Anne Hathaway looked amazing, and then my head was like, you know who else looks amazing? Tatiana Maslany.
I see. Anyway, Anne Hathaway was photographed in that little pink outfit.
But she's the best. Yeah. I love Anne Hathaway. We only have one more comparison, which is that Salafhad had five daughters, and there are five Bennett daughters. And that's literally it. That's all we've got for this episode.
Seems like a pretty strong comparison, though.
It's solid.
Overall, like, this whole conversation relates back to our conversation from last week about, like, women's ability to determine their own futures and, like, make decisions and, have power in whatever way that looks in their society.
Right, yeah. And if you want that conversation, just go and listen to last week's episode, because I'm too tired to have it again, right?
Yeah, we get real into some feminism and queerness discussions. I got
the funniest message from Becca, one of our little burps, Becca.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if she messaged you this, but let me find it. She goes... I know it is very much already Shabbos for you. It was already Shabbos for me. But is it possible that you and Valerie might have attributed an Audre Lorde quote to Rachel Berkowitz?
Oh, that's funny. Technically, yes.
That's so funny. I assume Valerie heard it from Rachel, who took it from Audre Lorde. And she goes, that was my guess. Because Rachel quotes it, but she always attributes it. Anyway, and I just thought that was the funniest thing. Because, like, famous quotes about feminism. And we're like, you know what? Which Talmudic scholar said this thing?
That's so funny.
Yeah.
My apologies to Audre Lorde.
So funny.
That is really, really funny. I'm so sorry.
Good times, great classic.
But I guess, like, in to like re like, I think I knew that that was not like something that Rachel spoke.
You don't have to defend yourself to me. Oh man, bad episode for Valerie.
She's was getting a bad shit. Episode for me?
She's getting shit. Well, I keep giving you shit.
Yeah,
you have to. Or
that's
have
just
to
my life. I put myself out there. I know.
Oh man. I can never decide if I like Keira Knightley or not. She like irks me, but also I like pretty much every movie she's in, except I didn't like Misbehavior so much.
Yeah.
This is 2 weeks in a row we've done Keira Knightley movies.
It is 2 weeks in a row.
Wow.
I like her in certain roles. I think she like pulls off that like dry sense of humor really well, especially in like period pieces like this. Like I'm thinking like Pirates of the Caribbean is also kind of set in like I don't know what you would call that.
Like I think I watched Atonement one time and literally it scarred me for life and I can never watch that movie again because it's just too traumatizing. But she's fantastic in it. And I really like she was in this movie about like a whistleblower for the, like against the British government. And it was really good. Let me find it.
Yeah, send it to me.
Movie rec. Did you know Keira Knightley was in Thunderpants?
I don't even know what that is.
Thunderpants is a movie about farting underpants with Rupert Grint from 2002. In the same year she was in Bend It Like Beckham, she was in Thunderpants. Wow, I'm blown away. Also, the fact she's in Never Let Me Go.
Oh my gosh, I want to rewatch Bend It Like Beckham.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that. Okay, so this movie is called Official Secrets. It's really, really good. Okay. About a whistleblower who leaks information about, I think it's like the 2003 invasion of Iraq or something like that.
Cool.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe I'll also rewatch Bend It Like Beckham and Never Let Me Go. Done. Bested.
Great.
I have my plans for tomorrow night now.
Wait, what's Never Let Me Go?
Oh my god, you
the book?
The movie based on the book.
I don't know that I've seen it. Keira Knightley's in that too.
The book is Kazuo Ishiguro.
Yeah.
One of my favorite books ever. The movie is Carey Mulligan, Andrew Garfield, Keira Knightley as the main trio, and then like Donald Gleason's also in it somehow. Like it's stacked. And that movie also scarred me, like, for life. Like, bless you, Yarden.
Shoshana says bless you.
But that movie, like, literally, I remember seeing it. It was me and my cousin, Erin, and, like, one other person in the theater. And we were all, like, audibly sobbing. Bless you, Yarden.
Bless you again.
Anyway.
Oh my god, Sumi hates when Yarden sneezes and she'll like be like, like she doesn't like it.
But anyway, everyone has homework this week, which is to watch Never Let Me Go.
Okay, Never Let Me Go, Bend It Like Beckham. What was the last one called?
Official Secrets.
Official Secrets.
Me who doesn't like Keira Knightley, but is just only
recommending Keira Knightley movies. Yeah, perfect.
Cool, okay.
Okay. What are we watching next week?
It's a great question. Next week. Wow, can you believe we're starting our last book?
That's crazy.
We've done four whole books of this podcast. I'm proud of us.
Oh my gosh. Do you know what we're not watching next week to kick off Devarim?
Wait, no, don't tell me. I'm about to find it. Oh my god, Star Wars.
Star Wars.
The Force Awakens, right?
It just says Star Wars here, but yeah,
I think it's The Force Awakens. Also, can we tell the people that?
Oh no, we're gonna make so many enemies next week. Like people are big Star Wars fans.
Yeah, we're gonna just be like, I don't care about this. What was I gonna say? Last week, or when we were like planning these, we forgot that Matot Masé was like one part, like as a combined parsha, and so we came up with two different movies. Originally, for Matot, we were gonna do We Bought a Zoo. So just think about what that could have been. Maybe for season two, we can do it.
Or yeah, like I was thinking we'll do like season two will be like other, will be Nacht.
Story, or like stories we never, and then season three is like stories we never visited.
Yeah, like Talmudic stories. And then for season four, we'll do like a redux and we'll do the Parsha every
nice.
Week. And then cool. we'll yeah, go back and one. Like make okay. edits.
So season two, we're locking ourselves in for a long time. Season two is Nach.
Yeah.
What if it was season two is Nevi'im? Season three is Ketuvim.
Okay.
Season four is Talmud.
There's going to be five seasons of this podcast.
And season five is Redux.
Okay. Fine.
Well, what else do you have to do?
You're right.
Unless by then, like, podcasts are obsolete and they're in an old format.
You know, when you're in, we'll have adapted. We'll pivot. That's we'll true. Do whatever yeah. the new thing is.
Hologram
schmick
stories.
Schmuck.
Yeah.
I'm starting a new app called Schmick Schmuck. I don't know what it does, but what was I going to say? You know, it's good to have a 5-year plan.
Yeah, 5-year plan.
Yeah. Next time I'm in a job interview, maybe, at least I'll be able to say something.
Maybe by the end of the 5 years, we will have money to buy like proper microphones and hire someone who can edit properly.
We'll see. That's not a part of making money is not a part of the 5-year plan.
It's true. It's just learning Torah. It's yeah. learning Torah. And it's like watching movies with friends, you know?
Yeah. I just want to give people a little preview of what our okay. upcoming movies are for the last book. Cause I think that there's some really good ones in here. We have WALL-E. We are going to do a little bit of The Crown. We're going nice. To do Arrival. We're going to do Hairspray.
Yeah.
Spotlight.
We're going to do Fyre Festival documentaries.
Both of them. We're going to watch both.
We got some good ones coming up, you guys.
The Lion King.
If you thought of ducking out around now just for the fifth book, you're like, four is enough for me. Stick around for the fifth.
Yeah. We got some good shit. Okay.
I'm going to bed.
Sleep well.
I'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Star Wars. I'm going to say it like that the whole time.
Great. Okay. Love y'all.
Bye, little bubs. Bye, Val.
Bye.